Welcome back to still the first season of Graveyard Shift. We're doing podcasts as much as you guys are wanting these podcasts, so there's no more complaints. There's no more people saying, God, I love you guys. I wish you would be more offensive about paranormal, because that's what we do best. Today's sponsor is Four Hands, right?
Yes.
And what is the beer we're drinking, Aaron, our special guest?
The beer we're drinking today is Four Hands, a peanut butter chocolate milk stout. Absence of light.
Absence of light.
I don't like light.
I'm your host, Frankie Gambaletta.
And I am Jeremy David King.
Jeremy David, David King.
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 My king.
King.
Ooh.
Hey, look. See, I told you you'd start calling me king.
I love it already. Not even, let's just try this. Cheers. Ready?
It's good.
Oh, we're not.
It's got a nice bouquet.
We're not tapping the table with it. We're not shooting it. It was unaware of our drinking
style.
You know
what? It's a bit nutty.
I can taste the peanut butter. I can taste the peanut butter and chocolate in it. Yep.
Make sure you get that right on the mic, too, though. Good. Aaron, can I hear some of that?
It tastes like a stout.
Stouts are good. Do you get any peanut butter in it?
As much as I do in any stout that I drink.
You can't taste the peanut butter in the stout?
Not particularly, no. I do taste a little bit of chocolate, though.
Because, well, a lot of stouts have chocolate in it anyway. Mm-hmm. But I can taste the peanut butter.
Maybe you got all the peanut butter.
It's nice.
I took it all. Well, I love peanut butter. It's one of my favorite foods. It's my favorite food group.
That's undeniable.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Are you a creamy or a chunky peanut butter person?
Chunky, of course.
Absolutely.
Chunky. I love chunky.
Absolutely. That's the way to go.
Yeah. If I had my choice, it would be chunky honey roasted.
Like a Jif situation?
Peter Pan.
Peter Pan. Is Peter Pan different than Jif? I thought Jif and Peter Pan were the same thing.
Is she already going to be dismissed?
Yeah, she's out. You can't
shoot.
Do not bring up Jif here. We are Peter Pan
eaters. First of all, Jif is the choose your moms. Do we look like moms too? Oh, yeah. You're a mom.
I am a mom.
So it's choosier for you.
Yeah, choosier it over there.
I am.
Choosy it over there.
Yeah. I am a third generation Peter Pan eater.
So this is kind of how we're doing these podcasts now. We've gone to a longer format. We've been more offensive, and our plays have been so much more enthusiastic. We have people returning after last week's Think Outside the Bird Box.
You just bring it up and I'm gonna laugh.
our play rate has gone up exponentially, right? 622% over the previous weeks. Bird Box, Think Outside the Bird Box, is actually the most played podcast that we've put out. And I think it's because we've hit kind of that insurgence of the people loving that film. Now, Aaron has not seen that film, so I'm going to stop talking about it. But this is the new format.
Spoiler. There's birds in a box.
Shock.
That do absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
There were birds hurt in the making of that film, because if any bird saw that fucking movie, they would commit suicide.
You guys, if nothing else, Sandra Bullock is worth watching for a couple hours.
And John Malkovich, too.
I'm in it for Sandra Bullock.
Yeah, I mean.
She's my lady. She could get it.
She is my lady. Oh, Jesus.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I'm going to drink more of this beer.
Yeah, you do that.
She is my queen. We're going to start singing on this, too. We're talking, but this is a paranormal podcast. But the first thing I want to do is, because we have a beautiful, this girl is so gorgeous. I first met her, one of the writers in town. You know what? Finish the beer, then you really will vomit. She went from mimosas. This beer is incredibly good.
Yeah, I like it.
This is great. This is a great little start to our day. And the reason why I thought this would be cool, and I'm so glad that Aaron joined us. I met Aaron a couple years ago at a Lindsay Patton was running for Alderwoman. Unfortunately, she lost, but hopefully, you know, she'll rebound in the upcoming elections if she decides to run again. But
cute.
God, already. We gotta count them today. That's one.
That's one.
All right. We've said fuck once too, so that's twice.
I didn't do it. Neither of them was me.
I know. Well, at our age, you run out of fucks. So
I ran out of them years ago.
Fresh out.
Yeah.
Fresh out of fucks.
Oh no, there's dust in that box. Two.
So this is a paranormal. We need the ounce of estrogen. And I think that we were being very alpha and toxic. Like, there's a little masculine toxicity that was happening.
I mean, there's hair on the walls here. You know what I mean?
Everybody in this house has eaten a meatball that I made them, except for Erin. So she's going to have a meatball tonight.
Meatball.
We're just going to make a meatball. It has pork in it.
It has pork in it. You're eating pork tonight.
She doesn't eat pork.
I don't eat pork.
I feel bad for bacon.
You did remember. Congratulations, you're better than my grandma. Oh.
Grandma's making you bacon, huh?
Can't even blame. Can't even blame dementia anymore. You just always forgot, man.
Grandma shows up. I made that bacon dip you love.
I haven't eaten meat. Well, I've eaten poultry, but I stopped eating meat when I was 13 years old. So that's how long it's been.
Are you a vegan or a vegetarian?
No. I'm not even a vegetarian. I'm a pescatarian. Kind of.
Okay.
Explain. But extra. So at first I didn't eat any meat at all. Okay. No meat products. Okay. And then a couple years in, I decided to start eating lean meats. So chicken, turkey, occasionally fish.
Sirloin?
Never. Never.
Well, the thing is, today she had our other sponsor. Duck. The duck, man. The blue duck in Maplewood. If you're in St. Louis, if you're in Missouri.
Can you not? Okay. Missouri. Can we call it what it is?
That's the western side of the state, and they're wrong.
They're wrong. Amen.
Okay.
We live in Missouri.
Today, right now, it's Snowmageddon, and we're actually all huddled together drinking peanut butter chocolate stout.
There's a small fire in the middle of the table.
Yep. That's because of my herpes. But listen... But no, honestly, like, the reason why I called you all here today is because we're 290 days outside of Halloween 2019.
God, I love Halloween.
We're almost there. We're almost there.
You know, it's
a marathon, not a sprint, but
there's like 340 days till Christmas, and my jerk neighbor's already got his Christmas lights up. I'm really sad.
What a dick.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
There's a Christmas tree here with Halloween ornaments on. Anyway,
this is true.
The idea behind this podcast, though, is we're going to talk about some interesting paranormal things that have happened. Does not happen to me. And the reason that is A, it's offensive. B, it's kind of how I like to structure these podcasts now, because going forward, we really don't care if we get followers, and the people that do listen enjoy us. So we're going to stay on longer. We're going to add beautiful hosts that you'll never see unless you stalk her like I tried to do, but it was terrible because she's really boring.
And you're welcome.
If she had a Jeep, I'd follow her.
Exactly. On Instagram.
Yeah. But you don't have a Jeep.
Just the Passat.
Passat. I like VWs. I've owned one.
It's worth following her just for Instagram pics in the morning.
I mean, you're welcome.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm gonna put this in the phrase of millennials, totes McGoats.
Ew.
That totally makes me think of a goat floating in like a Rubbermaid container down a river.
Well, the thing is, guys, I want people to really feel that we're thinking about Halloween 2019, 290 days out. So the reason why we're drinking this beer is Reese's Pieces happen to be my favorite Halloween candy.
It's a great one.
So why don't we just get to know each other a little bit, a little weirder, get a little weird, and ask everybody like what their favorite Halloween candy is.
Because everyone's going to say Reese's, that's why.
You think?
Everyone.
Well.
What is yours, Jeremy?
I would say anything with peanut butter. I mean, including those black and orange peanut butter taffies. I love those things.
Yeah.
But I, you know, Reese's peanut butter cups. Ask my wife. Ask the kids at school. They know they can bribe me with peanut butter. Reese's Pieces, Nutrageous. How about those Reese's peanut butter cups that have Reese's Pieces in them?
They're in there.
They're in there.
They're coming out. Come out, yeah. Little Reese's Pieces.
Oh,
peanut butter is like...
If I was a miner, I would mine for Reese's Pieces inside a peanut butter cup.
I do that.
I love it. Aaron, what is your favorite candy?
I think it's Reese's.
Oh, Jesus. This was boring as shit.
I mean, occasionally... Lovers. No, I get... So, my friends at work gave me this big bowl of candy, like, on my desk for my birthday. It was part of a thing that they did in my office. And they put all kinds of different chocolate in there. And let me tell you.
Reese's went first.
Yeah. The Reese's are gone first.
Okay. So we basically need to say, what's your favorite candy outside of Reese's anything?
Wow. Intrigued.
I've got two or three that I could throw out there.
I love that we don't have any drop sounds. I'm actually doing that.
So, outside of Reese's, what you got, Erin?
I also just really enjoy like a Hershey's, just the plain chocolate.
The Kisses?
No, I like a Hershey bar.
The Hershey bar.
Yeah. All right,
fair enough.
Yeah.
What about you, Franklin?
Snickers.
Snickers?
Ooh,
Snickers
yeah.
is okay, Snickers is one of mine. Yeah. Then I would throw out Twizzlers. Oh, I love Twizzlers.
I don't know.
Twizzlers are kind of like unfinished. It kind of feels dots. Like, you know, it's like it, like Twizzlers were kind of made like in a candle factory and then somebody accidentally poured sugar into the candle.
But that's good.
It's kind of like tasting like, it tastes like a candle with sugar in it. And
no, that's the Switzers, which are made in St. Louis.
If it's not chocolate, I'm not interested.
You do mean it's the Switzers?
The Switzers.
We have the Switzers. Has anyone tried the Switzers?
Yeah, I would say Twizzlers and Dots. Dots have always been, I guess those are gumdrops.
Yeah, fuck that.
So I love those.
Yeah, fuck that.
Man, I didn't even get to use mine yet. Fuck.
I think that was a great way to make that question so much better because we're trying to warming people up to what we're talking about today is heavy. It's heavy, man. People are out there and they're being sexually assaulted literally.
Are they?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, and that goes back to almost everything that we do paranormal. Is it really happening or is it not?
Is it a ghost in the board situation or is it a brick in the board situation or is it a, I mean, that's the question.
Well, before we dive in, mm-hmm. let's, because people know us, we have 7 podcasts now. And if they don't, they know us in person. Mostly our followers are our friends.
Yeah they know us.
So it's nice. We don't see them all the time. It's nice for them to hear our voices and our offensiveness.
We miss you guys.
Jeremy farted numerous times before this podcast.
So offended.
Oh, I will fart during it, too.
And I'm excited about that. Erin is not, but whatever. You farted in front of everybody. I think you have some kind of record. Is Erin's belief system as it relates to the paranormal?
Wait, I thought that was not... the subject of...
Oh, too late.
It's not, but we already breached the subject. We have to build character. We're filmmakers, too. Character development. Do you stand on the side of, you know, it's just coincidence, and it's not paranormal, and when we die, it's like a TV screen. I don't know why I'm talking like that. You don't talk remotely like that. But she does say
She does a little bit.
She does say weird things like worm.
Worm.
Is it worm?
Is it a worm, or are you not cold?
She also says that weird midweek quarter.
Do I say quarter? Quarter?
No, you say
it. It was fine.
You just say the worm thing. That's kind of weird.
Worm, warsh.
Worm. What?
I'm going to go have a bath.
Yeah, just use that one.
All right, so what are your thoughts on the paranormal?
Oh, I 100% believe it's real.
Oh.
I have seen a ghost in my life. However, I think that a lot of the media that we consume today that is based around the... fun of the paranormal, the excitement of the paranormal. I don't believe that it's all real. Obviously, I think a lot of it's fabricated. I would like to be proven wrong, but it is what it is, you know?
Can we dive into, she saw a ghost?
Yeah.
Love to hear that story.
Question.
What was your ghost thought? Did you lock him?
Was he English?
It was a lady.
And was she English?
No. Probably Irish.
Oh.
Quaker.
Well, I like it. I like it already.
All right, let's get into this.
So when I was interning at the Campbell House in 2010, Campbell House, St. Louis, my summer, junior year of college, on the third floor, so they have this staircase, the staircase that goes up the front of the house, not the servant staircase, because that doesn't exist in the same way anymore. But the old staircase that goes up the front of the house, if I would go up that staircase in the morning, even if the sun's like bright out high during the day, that house gets really dark because you have all these shutters and you have 2 front doors on the house. So you have the inner front door with the glass and you have the outer front door that doesn't have any windows, right? So if you're going down those stairs, it's really, really dark. And if you have to go down there and open up the doors and everything, for your guests to come in, to the museum that day. It's really dark. But every day after those doors were opened, after the windows were opened up, I would go up the front stairs and on the third floor often. I mean, this didn't happen one time. It happened often. Out of the corner of my left eye, I often saw a lady in a blue dress standing next to the fireplace in the room that's there on the third floor. And it became commonplace for me. I didn't worry about it anymore after the first few times. And it was just like, oh, I don't know who that is, but she's hanging out and she likes that room and she likes that spot and she likes this time of day. So, hi, lady. But that's the only ghost I think I've ever actually seen that I know is like.
So did you ever talk to her?
No. Not out loud. I mean, I'm not like trying to have a conversation. Because, yeah. I mean, it freaks you out a little bit, you know? Mm. You're not comfortable enough to be like, because if you look too hard, it's not there anymore.
Okay.
That's how I felt. And the first few times I was like, is that just the way that the fireplace is? Like, why do I see this all the time? You know? And when I would go through the house as a docent, you know, going through showing guests the museum and talking about the people that lived there and the people that might have worked there, you wonder, like, should I say this? Should I not? And it's not ever something I dived in with people because I wanted to talk about what I knew was real, what I was comfortable with being real.
Fair enough.
But it was, as you're talking about these people all the time with strangers, that you end up feeling closer to the people you think lived in that house and worked in that house than you do the like real humans that walk through. It's kind of crazy.
So
that's a really weird thing I just said.
It's actually really good. And I was hoping that he wouldn't interrupt with a burp or a fart, but, there it is. So just for people's edification too, like go a little bit into your background because you did a lot of work on the Campbell House, which I found fascinating when we used to grab coffee when you were living and then you came back. So we've had a chance to catch up a couple times, but you know, from that standpoint, I think that is a, you know, as unserious as we can be on this podcast, sometimes these little nuggets came out and, you know, I felt the same way about the Lemp family, just like researching mm-hmm. them for 4 years is like, you almost could pick out a dress or you could pick out food or you could take these people anywhere, you know,
versus. Oh,
I agree.
There is a piece of intimacy that you feel with these humans that no longer exist on this earth, right? So you end up feeling close to people that don't currently exist. Mm-hmm. And I think at some point, you have to honor that emotion and that feeling and that relationship. And even if it's only one-sided, right? You have to say, I feel like I know a lot about you and thank you for what you've given me, right? Whether that's real or not, I don't know that there's any way to tell, but I think it's valuable.
I can totally relate to that feeling with all the history I did and all the time I spent at Tri-County, specifically mm-hmm. there, even though I'm pretty sure Mr. Bates really didn't like me.
And that's interesting that you bring it up. I think sometimes the haunts that we grow close to, right? Like, and for a lot of people on Paranormal Task Force, which if you haven't heard or you haven't listened to any of our podcasts, me and Jeremy are members. Jeremy's actually on the board of directors for Paranormal Task Force. It seems I've never been there, never experienced Tri-County. I mean, I had the opportunity a long time ago, but I was always so busy.
Yeah.
But, you know, we had stopped ghost hunting that for, it got bought by somebody else. But I get that from a lot of people. I think that was a very active spot.
It was scary active. Like, I've always had a theory that rain actually amps up the activity. So if it was a night when it was totally just stars out, it was an active night. If it rained, that place was scary.
Do you think that has something to do with the electromagnetic field that's created with like lightning and all that?
That and rain has a negative charge. Mm. So it's just free energy just milling about.
I'm very curious about the science behind that.
Yeah. There's the rain actually has a charge to it, and I agree with the lightning too, but just the rain in general, flowing water, mm-hmm. flowing, you know, any place that's been, we've been to that's been near water is almost always active. There's other places that it really depends. Some nights it's, you know, you can't catch enough evidence, and other nights you catch nothing the entire time. But Tri-County was never like that. It was active every time. Mm-hmm. It was, yeah, I miss that place.
As I know we talked earlier about the power of suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
I often felt like when I was at Campbell House, which I think is probably the most active place I've ever been, day in and day out, you know, while I was sitting there either working on the computer, going through archives or whatever, I would hear stuff and feel stuff. And I know on the fourth floor there, that's where any ghost hunters that ever come through always find the most activity. That's where the children's rooms were. And that's where the offices are. So that's where Andy's office is. That's where the interns sit. That's where you sit there with the archives as you're digitizing them, right? And that's where you always feel like there's somebody else there. And everyone feels this feeling. Nobody can describe it. Like there's somebody, you always feel like there's somebody standing in the hall, even when you're up on the fourth floor by yourself. But do you think that that has anything to do with the power of suggestion and people saying, this is how I feel when I'm up in this space? So then you begin to feel that way.
I think there's merit to it. I would, if that many people have had that experience, I would bet that some people had that experience before they knew the stories. 'Cause that's, my experience doing this for this long is, yeah, I think there is absolutely the power of suggestion is a real thing. But, you know, doing this long enough, I know, don't tell them anything. Mm-hmm. And let them walk in and let them tell you what they think. And inevitably, it seems like even people who know nothing still have those same feelings in these places that, because we go to places that we know are paranormally active and we go there time and time and time again. And so we have this record of that, you know, this area has this happen all the time. And so when you take somebody in who really doesn't know the stories and doesn't never been there before, and they're corroborating the same feeling, I think that takes out the power of suggestion altogether.
Well, this has been kind of a deep dive. Aaron holds a degree in history, correct?
Yes.
From Lindenwood University, which is the oldest college.
Actually, west of the Mississippi.
West of the Mississippi.
That's not true.
Which one's older?
SLU.
Screw SLU. You want to be a Billiken? Nobody knows what a Billiken is anyway.
Weirdos.
Lions. I'm a lion.
Me too.
No questions about lions.
Simba.
I want to be that lion from Madagascar.
So she did her thesis on the Campbell House, as you've seen. She spent a lot of time there. And I think that as you grow more accustomed to the family, I am very curious about the Campbell House now being a potential haunt. I don't know if that's something they would be interested in doing, because it does have that living history aspect where artifacts, and they don't want people like breaking shit, right?
Well, here's the thing about Campbell House. It's one of the very few museums that exist in the nation today that went straight from the home of the family that the museum is based on to the museum. It was home to the Campbells and then a museum. It had nothing in between, no owners in between.
That's awesome.
It went up for auction, and a very small group of people, very dedicated to the family, the history, the cause, bought a lot of the artifacts back in that auction. So a lot of that history is preserved, and they're very proud of that.
And everything is all
original. It's all original. They talk a lot about, so I know
you want to get in there.
Oh, it's a very exciting thing for me as a history nerd to stand in there and talk about. But I know a few weeks ago I went to the Garden Glow, and we went through the Shaw House, Zach and I, and,
is this Zach Baggins?
It's not Zach Baggins.
I'm blind.
But, you know, he's not like... Guys are ridiculous.
It's prism glasses, man.
Prism.
is that?
He's probably bored with my nerd, to be fair. But so I'm going through the house and I'm looking at all the furniture they have on display. And I'm like, I wonder how much of this is from Philadelphia. Because there was so much of what the Campbells have was brought back from these wood carvers and wood makers in Philadelphia. And that was like the cream of the crop as far as furniture at the time. And so I'm just like, I wonder if I could get under these chairs and see if there's tags on them. And, you know, when you see things from that time, when you've had that kind of experience, it's really, you nerd out pretty easily.
It's not that far off from us as ghost hunters. We kind of nerd out on the same stuff.
Yes. Yeah.
It's very history based.
Well, yeah. I think, yeah, there's a tie there for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's actually that it's, history is exciting, especially when you find out these hidden secrets about the family, or in your case, you did a deep dive into, you know, ownership and census and understanding who lived in the house. And for me, I mean, like, our eyes both lit up when we learned just now that the Campbell house went from Campbell to museum, because
absolutely nobody else mucking it up.
Right. And that makes a lot of sense with, you know, whatever the apparition that Aaron saw numerous times. And it is very much the same, right? It's the same story. It's the corner of the eye. It's not full on.
Right.
And that just might be energy that the ghost possess, that, you know, it can...
It was always in the same spot. It never interacted. Yeah, it never interacted. Residual. It was residual. She was always standing in the same spot. And like I said, I never tried to talk to her because I'm not trying to do that. My relationship with her is extremely one-dimensional.
Because I don't know the history. Would it be a slave?
No, she was dressed way too elaborate to be a slave. That was definitely,
so this would be like the mother. I don't know. Did they have housekeepers?
What
time period is this? I guess
turn of the century. Late 1800s.
So definitely not a slave.
So, they did have slaves up to a certain point. But when the house was turned over, it was in the Campbell family for a very long time.
That was part of your research, though, right?
Yes. Domestic work in the home.
Yeah.
The docents always gave tours of the home, telling guests that, Robert Campbell didn't own slaves. He was an Irish immigrant, was a mountain man. He worked really hard for what he had, and he didn't believe in slavery. And that very well may have been true. His wife was a Quaker. They did, obviously, were not super into slavery, didn't love the concept. Can't knock them for that. But his wife inherited a slave. And we know that because one day in my little unpaid college internship, I was going through the archives that UMSL owns, the Mercantile Library Archives, and I found an emancipation paper. And it was signed R. Campbell. And I said, yep, that's Robert Campbell's signature. I've seen that enough in my experience as an intern here that I know that that's Robert Campbell's signature. And we didn't have that record. And so I look at it really closely, and he has, on this piece of paper, he's emancipating an Eliza Roan. And they kept pretty good financial records in that house. The house was run pretty well. And you can see that he was sending money to an Eliza Roan in Kansas City for several years. And so what can only be surmised is that they inherited a slave, and she worked as a domestic worker in their home for several years until she became of age. And she then moved to Kansas City with her husband. She got married, was emancipated. Moved to Kansas City with her husband, and Robert Campbell treated her much like a daughter and sent her money for a long time. We know that her husband did serve in the war.
World War One?
Civil War. He did serve in the Civil War. He was a soldier. But we only know that from the census records, and census records in St. Louis are kind of tricky because we have the federal census, which happens every 10 years, but St. Louis also kept a yearly census record. And a lot of that is lost because it burned up in a fire. So I haven't gone back and dove back into those records in a long time, but there's a lot of meat there. They weren't they weren't kept as strictly as census records are kept now. So you know how now you have to be like certified to take information right. down from somebody? That's not how it was. You were just kind of like, here, I'll give you a couple bucks if you go door to door and ask who lives in the house. We have a couple census records, federal censuses, that say Robert Campbell was from somewhere that is in Ireland. And we know he was. So they weren't kept in high regard, but generally they keep year after year, they keep fairly good records. So if you put them all together, you can kind of put the pieces together and figure out.
Yeah, which is different. So, you know, historical researchers like Aaron, like myself, like Jeremy, just so you're aware, St. Louis did stop taking a city census. I want to say right around 1890. I think they stopped doing it, and they relied heavily on the general census, which was every 10 years. And in 10 years, that's a decade. Think about 10 years ago where you were, and think about 10 years today, right?
Right.
And there's a lot of gaps there. You meet a lot of people. You have relationships. You might have kids. You might be married. You might be divorced. And so that gap has really hurt us a lot in trying to track down some people with LEMP. And but you were very lucky to kind of stumble upon like a state census and you know, which were a city census, which I think is phenomenal because it does give you that timeline, right? Because that's the one thing that, you know, we don't have, like, if you look in front of our table right now, there's about three cameras, recorders, you know, we have ways of basically capturing history, right? So from 100 years from now, I don't know where this podcast will be. Maybe somebody will be living here. I wonder who lived here 100 years ago. Oh, they drank beer.
Like, you know, there's two fat guys talking on walking sticks. There's
two fat guys. They ate a lot of bacon. Like, I don't, delicious. Maybe we haunt the place. Like, what's that smell of bacon again?
I smell bacon and farts.
Gross. I think what's really significant also to that point is, from a historical perspective, is that not only is 10 years a long time now, but, you know, when you're looking at the turn of the century, you're looking at, look at the ages that people got married. I mean, they were much younger. 10 years was a lot more significant, statistically significant, in a person's life than it is even now.
I mean, 10 years is like the golden anniversary now for relationships.
I mean, none of us can speak, you know, like, what are we going to say?
I can't go 10 minutes. Sorry.
There it is.
It came. It surfaced.
It came during the podcast.
Right when people were like, all right, these guys aren't as bad. And then there it comes.
Right during the podcast.
There it is.
There it is again. Anyway, so we're at the halfway mark here. Aaron has given us a kind of a really cool idea behind Campbell House. I mean, that there is a spirit there. There's a ghost there. It's a residual haunting. But you never had a feeling of negativity or sense demonic or...
Oh, no, nothing demonic. I mean, the only negativity I had was that I don't want to be scared. That freaks me out a little bit. I don't want to be alone with a ghost. I don't think it's any more than most people would have in their initial, you know, spiritual experience.
Did you ever, so maybe not like what Jeremy would have been like, well, how you doing?
How you doing, baby?
What's your name?
What's your name? Can I get your number?
Hey, girl.
Hey, baby.
Hey, what are you doing over here? You look nice with that dress. Come here for a second.
At the end of the day, what you got to do? Forget about it. But what do I know?
So what did you ever try to kind of research who that lady might have been?
So I think for me, it was more about understanding the whole of the piece. You know, it wasn't the only time it ever became individual was when I was studying Eliza Roan. There also have been sightings of a young woman coming down the back stairs, the servants' quarters in the kitchen. I never saw that. I never experienced that. A lot of the docents speak to it. They often say that they think it's Eliza because it looks like a girl with dark skin. And as far as we know, she is the only slave that was ever in that house considered a slave. And we know that she was came into the home underage. So that's why we think she was probably raised as a child. You know, child. She definitely worked in the home as a domestic worker. Who knows if she ever earned anything for that while she was working? I mean, we don't really know, but there have definitely been sightings there, and because of that, that's who I was interested in. And because I found that emancipation piece that was new to everybody there. You know, the director of the hotel, Andy. I mean, he didn't even know. And when I found it, I ran down four flights of stairs and said, "Oh my gosh, you have to see this." And that's probably one of my proudest academic moments, to be honest.
Sure, it's an uncovering.
Yes. I mean, I completely stumbled upon it by accident. Completely by accident.
In film, Roger Deakins, my favorite cinematographer, always talks about happy accidents. And it happens in every line.
So does Bob Ross.
Happy little tree. Happy little accident.
Yeah, we don't make mistakes. We make happy accidents.
No mistakes.
No mistakes.
No mistakes.
None.
Not a single mistake.
It's not a mistake that you're sitting next to me.
Mistake.
No.
Coincidence.
I think not.
Is that your hand on my knee?
Yes.
You're not wearing headphones, and how creepy that was.
I'm not wearing headphones. That's true. That's
what. Like,
I really hope that that's like an enjoyable experience for all of our.
That's what they
12 listeners.
That's right.
There's 13.
Probably dropping as
hey,
we talk.
There's right 13 now. Listeners.
Right.
I got you guys.
Well, yeah. I mean, you count his mom, my mom.
My mom doesn't listen.
My mom is sick today, but I hope one day she listens and she isn't mad that I'm taking so long to get home.
My mom's offended that I'm born.
Oh.
Academically, I think that there are a lot of achievements that can come with doing the research and when we find the homework. But I do have one final question to kind of follow up on the Campbell House for you. You started the Campbell House to do this research, right?
I started the Campbell House because I thought that the Campbell House was interesting and I knew that I should do an internship while I was in college. It wasn't required, like, oh, you can't graduate if you don't do an internship. But I was a biology major before a history major. So I felt like I really needed to dive in to the humanities and I needed to soak up all I could in the little bit of time that I had before I graduated. And I was really passionate about living history and historical places. So museum management, that kind of thing. And so that's why I chose Campbell House. And I think it's an underrepresented and underserved gem that we have in the city here.
Yeah, and honestly, I mean, I consider myself a pretty good St. Louis historian, and I have not yet been to Campbell House. So, you know, shame on me, but I definitely will.
Shame.
Sorry. It's the mic in my face.
You feel like Beyonce?
I do. I feel empowered.
I never feel like Beyonce.
Yeah, well, there's a reason for that.
Well, so my question, why the follow-up is there is because like, did you start experiencing these apparitions as you got further into the research, or was she always there?
I don't remember there being a correlation to my depth in the research. I felt as though she was always there, definitely. I always believed in the paranormal. I just hadn't experienced anything that I was sure about before that.
Are you going to go to the ghost hunt on March 9th and 10th at Pythian Castle? You like how I dropped that right in there?
Pythian Castle. Castle. Castle.
Castle.
Castle.
Castle.
Castle of Tunnels.
March 9th. March 9th.
And 10th.
Now I'm going.
I have a question, though.
Yeah.
So your experiences and feeling when you were in the fourth floor feeling that stuff, did people tell you that they felt like that before you felt like that? Did you hear the stories first?
So the fourth floor experiences where I sat in my office?
Right.
I did hear about that stuff. I can't remember what came first, my feelings or the or the stories. The third floor, the woman, I actually had never heard that before. And then when I told the docents that, they used that as a
story.
Cannon fodder. For me, against me.
Content fodder.
To make fun of me for the rest of my internship there.
Until they saw it.
Well, so everybody, pretty much everybody there, docents and director, interns, everybody there has a story of some kind, pretty much. For me, and that's why I really love history because, you know, you stand in where the freaking break room is now, down in the basement where the gift shop is. Like, where the gift shop is, that's where they used to do laundry. And the domestic workers would be down there, and they would be doing laundry down there. And for me, I'm like, there is a whole bustling life, a whole world that happened here before I was here. And my experience here as an intern this summer is not even, like, a blink of an eye in the history of this physical space.
Right.
And this building, the history of it, isn't a part of my story. I'm a part of its story, right? And mm-hmm. I think that we have to honor that, and we have to be excited about that. And I think that that's why there are so many places in much older countries than our own, right?
Oh, yeah.
That are still standing, that are much older than ours. And St. Louis, it's an old city. And
for
there's
the
a whole,
U.S., it's old.
For the U.S., it's an old city. It's older than the country itself. And
that's right.
I think that there's a lot here to be honored and excited about. And I think more people should figure that out quickly.
I think we agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah. It's one of the reasons why I think we're doing podcasts and films and our film festival. And just in general, like not only the paranormal stuff, which this is a very haunted town. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I think we rival New Orleans in this, right?
Which
allegedly is our sister city.
If you ask anybody in St. Louis knows anything about St. Louis history, they'll tell you that New Orleans is our sister city. Nobody in New Orleans knows that.
Right, exactly.
Because Ooh. People in New Orleans don't understand that we were founded by Frenchmen from New Orleans. They don't understand the like why we have the fleur-de-lis as a symbol.
Right.
They don't understand where our history sits. But we do. I mean, our history is, it's old and it's deep and it's really incredible if you want to dive in.
Yeah, it's a great place to not only do paranormal research, but it's a great place to, you know, just to find, you know, interesting people too, like that care about some of the most bizarre things, but in and of it, like, makes this such a great place to not only grow up and raise children, but to also visit and to come out. And the botanical gardens, our zoo is the number one attraction in America right now, and it's free.
The botanical gardens is the ranked third in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it is absolutely breathtaking. It's like a different country when you're walking around there. You're just so
multiple different countries.
But if you just look at, even just Forest Park in itself, all the attractions within the city, we're veering way off right now, but, all the free stuff. You have the zoo, the science center, the history museum, the art museum. I had an art teacher, because I went to college at Lindenwood, so it's just outside St. Louis. And I had an art teacher that said, you know, if you live in St. Louis, you own a piece of a Van Gogh. And I was like, wow. Because you pay taxes into that. And I'm like, that's amazing. I've never heard somebody put it like that. And I think when you're passionate about something, you're passionate about art, you're passionate about history, zoology or whatever, you know.
Who said that?
My art history teacher in college.
Which one?
I don't remember her last name. I would know it if I heard it.
Tillinger.
Yes. I hate that.
Dr. Tillinger.
Yeah.
Yeah. She was my advisor.
Yeah. She said that.
She I remember her saying something like that before too. Awesome lady.
Yeah. She's incredible. And, you know, she said, when she said that, I was like, wow, that's real.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there are not a lot of cities that can say that because they don't publicly fund museums and these types of institutions.
Right.
So,
exactly.
And St. Louis, you know, it was built, you know, we talk about the history of the city, especially at the turn of the century. And we don't always talk about the size of the city and the way that the infrastructure was built. St. Louis was the fourth largest city in the nation for a long time. And before, you know, we have one of the coolest flags to date, city flags to date.
Oh, yeah.
It's so cool. If you've never seen the St. Louis city flag, which I'm sure all of you have because we probably know you. But if you haven't, Google it because it's the tits. It's pretty cool. It was designed by a Yale professor in the 60s or 70s in a flag designing competition. And it represents the confluence of the rivers and the fleur-de-lis at the confluence and the way that they come together. It has the fleur, you know, the fleur-de-lis where we sit, and it's pretty cool. But anyway. The infrastructure for the city was built for a much larger population. So we don't have really bad traffic. We have all of these institutions that we've been talking about for a much larger city than we are. So you get to kind of enjoy the city as though no one else lives here.
Right. Because it has dropped substantially. Right? I mean, we're at 600,000 turn of the century. We're down to like 240. So imagine the space for 600,000 people and you're living with 250. So it does, you know, there's the county city divide. There's definitely people that, you know, there's some animosity toward county people and city people.
Notice this.
Yeah. But you know, at the same time, I think that, you know, to Aaron's point, like, going off topic and stuff, but I think that people that do listen, and we have listeners like all over that have never been to St. Louis, which I think is crazy, right? Because think about the only thing that's in their head right now. You know, and so hopefully with our influence and with these podcasts and with our films that's coming out of St. Louis, and we're using St. Louis local talent, we're all collaborators on Shift Films, Graveyard Shift Podcast, the Film Festival in Benton Park. Like, you have to do your part. You have to come to a point where you stop talking and you just do. And my nickname here is Hip Shot. I mean, and it's just, it's been my thing. Like, hey, you want to do film? Let's do film. And just, you know, take a hip shot sometimes. And yeah, it's nice to think things through and plan and save money and stuff. But, you know, in the immortal words of Walt Disney, who's Chicago, Missouri based,
God rest his soul.
Yeah. The thing that, or his frozen head, the thing that I, the thing that I remember most about his book and reading about him was the quote that he said is just start. And if you do that, I think that you end up in the position that Shift Films and Graveyard Shift is going, where we are not only taking care of our city, but we're talking about fun things about our city, whether that be ghosts, paranormal, demonic possession, history. You know, I think that, you know, if you can find the right people that can bring that sort of drive, then you can establish a creative culture. And that creative culture can lead to so many things, like erasing a divide that shouldn't be there. And just understanding people's wants and views and likes, and just respecting people for, you know, who they are and what they want to be. So with that, we're going to close the show. I want to thank our lovely, esteemed, incredible guest, Aaron Shields. Shields of Beauty.
Oh, jeez.
I don't get it.
It's a little excessive.
I don't get it.
We're a little extra on this podcast.
I still want moon boots.
Those moon boots were ridiculous.
Yeah.
Where the fuck was she going?
She said Germany.
She said she got them.
Oh,
in Germany.
She got them from Germany.
And she was going to Germany with the moon boots. I'm like, where was she going to go with his moon boots? I can't wait to see her. I just want to see her footprints, like a little elephant, like a two-legged elephant.
Yeah, look, because it's going to look very different.
I want to know how she's going to hit that accelerator and not hit the brake pedal at the same time.
She has a Rubicon.
I know.
She has a black Rubicon.
Black Rubicon. Jeep.
Moon boots.
Jeep.
Aaron Shields and moon boots.
Jeep, I want moon boots.
They would be way better suited.
Reese's Pieces.
For the day. I don't have any snow boots.
Snickers.
This is our recap. It's so weird how strange we're. Campbell House Ghost. This was not even the show. It's so great.
Way to throw us off.
You're sorry,
fired.
Guys.
You're fired.
That's all right. We have another show to do right after this.
Sorry.
Usually, like, Winchester House was kind of like low. And then the next one, we can be super. Offensive.
I don't know how to be offensive.
Well, anyway, as always, I'm Frankie Camilletti, your host of Graveyard Shift.
And I'm Jeremy King.
And with us,
Aaron Shields.
Jesus.
Aaron Shields.
I was trying to do the whole Garth Elgar thing. And always with us is Garth Elgar. Like you're our pet monkey.
Oh, great. That makes me feel so fantastic.
Wow.
Never seen Wayne's World, have you?
Yeah, I have.
Then you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just wasn't, like, up to date with your sketch before you started.
This is going to be so funny because I'm actually going to keep this on there. And
we're everything.
Gonna, and we're going to do another closing because of how much you fucked that up.
Oh, my God. When do I get to say it?
What do you want to say?
Yeah, for him.
Okay, go ahead.
Is that right, his, you feel better? Like, did he just...
Right, well, this is actually the wrap of this show. As always, I'm Frankie Cambaletta, your host.
And I am Jeremy David King.
And with us...
always is...
Aaron Shields.
Wow. We did it.
We fucking did it.
That was so sexual.
Oh, my God. Oh, we actually ran out of tape. Just playing.
That was sexual.
Who the fuck has tape? That's like my mom. Get the recorder. Oh, totally. All right, this is probably. A peanut butter. He actually liked the podcast, listened to it, and John said it sounds much better. He's going to teach us how to like do a call-in with Skype whenever he's not working.
That's awesome.
Because right now he's holding the Ursula Mini Pro.
Ursula. All
right, our sponsor today was Four Hands Brewing, the absence of light, peanut butter chocolate milk stout, which we all enjoyed. If you're around the area, support Four Hands.
Four Hands
Brewing Company.
It was awesome. All right, take us, wrap us up, Aaron.
Thank you for joining us today. Good night.